everybody. This is Dr. Diana Wiley, and I am your host of Love, Lust, and Laughter. Just 1 month ago, exactly May 13th, I was giving a keynote speech, Mandalas Women's Integrative Lifestyle Forum in Iowa, and Dr. Shaw, my guest, is the director for Mandala Integrative Medicine. Welcome to this program, Dr. Shaw. I'm so glad you're on. We got to know each other a bit, and I'm pleased that we did. Welcome.
Thank you so much, Diana. You know, it was lovely having you with us, and you know, it was great information for us also to have you over there, and it, you know, we had a great time.
We did, and the women attending and some men were very responsive, and I appreciated that. Lots of good questions after my talk and so on. And I'm thrilled that we're doing this program because it's something that I haven't really addressed before, and it is the connection between gut health and our sexuality. But before we get into that, I'm hoping, Dr. Shaw, that you can, by the way, listeners, Dr. Shaw is a medical doctor. If you could tell us your personal journey that led up to you deciding to do integrative medicine.
Sure. So, you know, as you know, I'm an internist. I'm an MD. And for years, I was doing, you know, traditional medicine. I was working in the clinic. I was working in the hospital. And so there were basically two reasons. The first biggest reason that I started looking into functional medicine or integrative medicine, as we call it also, is that my son was diagnosed with autism. Now, when he was diagnosed, I, being a traditionally trained physician, you know, I thought, you know what, it's not a big deal. You know, it's modern medicine has answers for almost everything. We'll find something. You know, I told my wife, and we started taking him to traditional pediatricians, and we really couldn't get anything. You know, they were, many of them said, oh, you know, don't worry, we will grow out of this. And some recommended medicines, which were, you know, they had like tons of side effects. Either they'll make him into a zombie or, you know, make him into a, there were other medicines which will just make him into a hyper bunny. And so they were just giving medicines or recommending medicines which were just going to treat his symptoms. And we were like, you know, we are not going to give these toxins to our son. You know, we want something which will really heal him. We want something for him that will make him into a productive member of the society. We want him to grow up as a independent and become an independent adult. And so in pursuit of this, we started looking into other areas, and that's where I came across functional medicine, and that was fascinating, that you can treat these chronic conditions for which traditional medicine doesn't really have too many answers by lifestyle changes, basically, you know, emphasizing nutrition, emphasizing, you know, just developing and helping the body's own natural ability to heal itself.
Yeah.
And, you know, we started, that was just an amazing thing. And then during that time, I was still, you know, I'm practicing in the hospital setting mostly, and I was looking, and then I started looking at these patients who were coming into the hospital, many of them, you know, like we, which you call frequent flyers, who come almost every month. And I started realizing what we are doing is just basically putting Band-Aids on the symptoms. Like, for example,
yes,
a person comes with, say, heart attack or congestive heart failure. Okay, we'll treat the patient in the hospital, But what will happen when the patient leaves the hospital in a few days and goes back home? What is he or she going to do to help him or her not to come back into the hospital? And I realized we were not really doing that service to really heal these people. And, you know, we were not really trying to heal the root cause or get to the root cause of these problems, but we're just putting, you know, treating the symptoms. And don't get me wrong, you know, traditional medicine in terms of acute medicine, there is no alternative to traditional medicine. If you're having a heart attack or if you're having a very severe infection or, you know, these things, they need immediate care. And there and traditional medicine is a route to go. But what led to these problems, or how could these problems have been even prevented in the first place? That's where I think functional medicine or integrative medicine has the upper hand, because in functional medicine, we are emphasizing lifestyle changes. We are really emphasizing nutrition and food and preventive medicine. And I think that's where the real health is, because we are giving the body the tools and the chance to recover itself, because our body has this amazing ability to heal itself if it's given proper tools.
And it's important, because at last count, I read that scientists estimate that around 750 trillion bacteria, yeast, and other microorganisms inhabit a healthy woman's digestive system and vagina. And so we've got, how do you treat your body determines whether the bacteria get residence, good, bad, or indifferent. So let's go into some of that. We're going to focus on women, but of course, men are affected by this, too. I guess most of your patients are women. Is that true?
Well, you know, it is completely true. Almost 85 to 90% of my patients are women. And I think it's because women are more in tune with their body.
And, yes. And we give birth, and we have to be.
Yeah, and they... And I think that's why most of my patients are women. And men, I think so, also have this this ego thing that I don't think anything's wrong with me.
Mm. So yeah, and that's why lots of women are a little frustrated to try to get their husbands or significant partners in to see the doctor, right?
I agree with you 100%. There are many of my patients who are women, and they tell me that, hey, dog, I wanted to bring my husband to you, but he doesn't think that he's sick or anything's wrong with him, but I know there's something wrong with him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, especially in regard to your program, that they're having problems in bed, and the wife or the girlfriend knows that there's something wrong, but the husband or boyfriend refuses to accept. So, you know, it can cause problems.
Of course it can. So let's talk about how gut and sexual health are linked together. We've begun the discussion a little bit, but let's talk some more. There is such a strong connection. And by the way, in doing my homework for this interview, I've learned a lot, and I'm so glad, because I don't think it's talked about quite enough. The connection, how does it work? You know, the intestinal system is a major physical factor that has many unexpected effects on our ability to respond and perform sexually. It's been called by some scientists the gut, the second brain. Mm-hmm. So these bacteria are responsible for producing hormones, enzymes, and neurotransmitters such as serotonin, which are essential for sexual health.
Definitely.
Can you expand on some of that, please, Dr. Shaw?
Sure. Well, you know, as you said, that gut is known as the second brain.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I personally would like to just make a little bit change, because when you say second, it gives secondary importance to something.
Uh-huh, yes.
I think, to me, we have two brains. Let's mm-hmm. put it like this. Our brain and our gut.
Mm-hmm.
And because our gut can think and even act on its own without sometimes input from our brain. So that's why, you know, it's such a unique organ. It's the only organ in our body that can function without input from the brain. It's such a unique organ.
That's fascinating, yes.
Yeah,
expand on that a bit, will you, please?
Well, you know, they did an experiment when they took a piece of our gut and they cut off any connection to the brain. They cut off all the nerves connecting the gut to the brain. And they applied pressure to the inside of that part of the gut. And when they applied the pressure to the inside of the gut, those waves which propel the food from when you eat the food, and that food is propelled down to our anus and we pass it out, those waves are called peristaltic waves.
Yeah.
So when they applied pressure to the piece of gut which had no connection to the brain, they observed the same peristaltic waves happening.
Hmm.
So, you know, that's just an example of how the gut can work without input from the brain. But in saying so, we also have to understand that each and every part of our body is intimately connected to other part. Each mechanism is connected to other mechanism. Nothing is working separately. So
we have the most amazing system in our bodies? It's remarkable. And so we want to treat our bodies really well, because they can work really well if we treat our bodies well. And we're going to talk a little more as we go on about nutrition and food and how that can contribute.
Definitely. You know,
yes.
So when we talk about how gut health is linked to sexual health.
Yes.
It's such a huge and vast field, because there's so many things, there's so many factors. We can talk hours and hours, and we can even, you know, I think books can be written on how gut health can affect sexual health. Like, so we can start with serotonin. You mentioned about serotonin. Now, serotonin is the main neurotransmitter which is involved with mood.
With mood, and that's why we have
yes.
the SSRIs, the serotonin uptake
yes, the,
inhibitors,
the, yes,
like
serotonin
Prozac.
Selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors,
mm-hmm.
those antidepressants. So,
mm-hmm.
And so when you think about mood disorders like depression or anxiety,
yes.
we immediately think, oh, there's something wrong in the head. But you'll be surprised to know that almost 80% of our serotonin is not produced in the brain. It's produced in our gut.
And so because the serotonin is produced in the gut, it does contribute then to sexual desire and arousal.
Definitely.
As I understand it, it's been found that several regions of the female genitals and even the central nervous system, this we can identify serotonin in the gut, and so then that affects sexual desire and arousal. Yes.
Yes, but the thing is that the release of serotonin, the way it's released, has a great impact on these things, on our sexual health and our mood. So the serotonin needs to be released in a very smooth and a constant manner.
Interesting.
So
yeah,
what happens when when you are stressed and when your adrenal glands start having a big output of the stress hormones, the release of serotonin in our gut is affected. So instead of being released in a smooth, constant manner, it is released in a spiked manner. Like, it is a, you know, it goes into like a huge spike. And when that happens, that spike, the upward spike and then the fall of serotonin can actually decrease your libido.
Can you make the connection? I can imagine, but the connection why it can affect your libido when it's released in sort of a spiky manner as opposed to smooth and constant.
Well, the nerve endings.
Yes.
The nerve endings to our sexual organs. When they face this huge surge of serotonin, instead of the receptors, so what happens, our human body is so intelligent, in a way, I would say, or it's made in such a way, when it sees an excess of something, the receptors tend to shut down. So when the spike of serotonin happens, the receptors feel that surge and they just shut off. So instead of you having that pleasure, that feeling of pleasure and arousal, you go in the opposite direction, even though your serotonin is actually higher than normal. But that's the key word. It's higher than normal. That huge spike should not have been there, because that spike actually caused the receptors to shut down.
So I know that that most people understand serotonin as being a mood enhancer, and it is. That's how Prozac back 30 plus years ago was sort of discovered, I guess.
Sure.
Outside the nervous system, it acts, as I understand it, to control and improve blood flow to several areas, including the female genitals. So my question is, how does serotonin enhance orgasm?
Well, you know, that's, again, as I said, it has to be in a controlled and smooth manner, because let me tell you, one of the side effects of these medicines, the selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, one of the most common side effect is lack of libido.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
So that's why it's interesting that it's increasing serotonin, but why is the libido going down? And one of the most common reasons people stop taking the selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors is lack of arousal and lack of libido.
that's right. They don't want that side effect. Because I have lots and lots of my clients, patients, that say, yeah, my libido is so affected by Prozac or whatever, right? And so I don't, and I can't, and it affects the ability to reach orgasm too.
Yeah, so that's why there are so many other factors also playing, because the name of the game is balance.
Mm-hmm.
If the balance is tilted in one way or other, you are going to face consequences.
Mm-hmm.
And the thing is that it's not only the blood flow, our sexual hormones,
mm-hmm.
you know, testosterone, estrogen, progesterone, DHEA, you know, all of these different sex hormones have a great connectivity to our gut. And I'll explain you how.
Yes, please do.
One of the ways that our gut bacteria, or, you know, gut microbiome, as you call it,
yes,
have this huge, amazing influence on all of our hormones, including our sex hormones, is because they are involved in the production and metabolism of these hormones.
Mm.
So these sex hormones, if you see how they are made, the first step in their synthesis is that all of these sex hormones start from cholesterol, fat. So our gut and gut microbiome is actually having a balanced, healthy gut and gut microbiome is necessary for proper digestion and absorption and utilization of fat.
Mm-hmm. Of fat.
Yeah.
Cholesterol. Mm-hmm.
So if there's anything which affects the health of our gut and our gut microbiome will lead to improper digestion and absorption and utilization of cholesterol. And if that happens, and instead of utilizing the cholesterol that we are consuming, and the cholesterol just goes out of our body without being utilized, guess what's going to happen? All these hormones which need that cholesterol are going to feel the burn. They're going to be imbalanced because the cholesterol is not there, or it's not there in proper amount. And that's where the cholesterol-lowering medicines, the statins.
The statins, yes.
Statins,
I was curious about that, how the use of cholesterol-lowering medicine can affect the libido. So
and they
you're
going to
talk about it. That's good.
And that's how they do it, because they remove cholesterol, which is the building block of all of these hormones, of all of our sex hormones. You remove the building block, there will be no building.
No building. Yes.
So, you know, so I'm like, statin drugs, they have their importance, and I understand, but they should be used in selected people.
Mm.
And the problem is it's now it's being used in younger and younger people without even giving them the education and guidance and support to change their lifestyles.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you go into a physician's office, and instead of the physician spending even 10 minutes with you discussing about lifestyle, nutrition, diet, and how it can impact you, they just give, it's easier for them to write a prescription of statin and giving it to the patient, even though the patient might not even need it. Not really understanding that if you're giving this prescription to this 30-year-old woman, what is this statin going to do with her hormones?
Exactly. And as I understand it, some of these drugs target digestion and the storage of fat. And it, I guess the idea is to normalize our cholesterol and triglyceride levels, but it causes so much disruption in the lifestyle and the health. And I think too many medical doctors, and you're a medical doctor, but you're involved with integrative medicine. And by the way, I work with a naturopath specializing in sexual medicine, and she really brings in the best of Eastern and Western medicine. So I'm really liking this, because too many medical doctors just prescribe a drug without really discussing it with the patient, and that's unfortunate.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk, Dr. Shaw. Oh, I should also say that if anybody wants to call in with a question for Dr. Shaw, you call 888-874-4888, and Kelsey, our wonderful producer, will screen your call and perhaps put you on the air. And so you can ask a real expert about gut health and sexuality. So if any of you have a question, please do call in. So you have the standard American diet.
Mm-hmm.
The acronym is unfortunate, SAD, S-A-D. So it's, unfortunately, it does affect our libido, our sexual health. Can you expand a little bit on how this standard, the SAD diet, how it impacts our health?
Sure. So there are many, many factors of how this SAD diet affects our sexual health, our libido. Well, one thing is, you know, you go out, for example, and you have this huge feast, pizzas and burgers and fries, and it's like 8 or 9 o'clock in the evening, and you come back home, and you're stuffed, you're feeling full. I would guarantee that having sex would be the last thing on your mind.
Mm-hmm.
And there are many reasons for that. One, the SAD diet has literally no fiber.
That's right. Yeah.
And we all know now that how important fiber is to our health.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it binds all the toxins, removes it from our body, and you know, it's it decreases inflammation all over our body. And then the keyword is inflammation. We need to remember this keyword, inflammation. Then the SAD diet is full of saturated fat, which is mostly, trans fat.
Mm-hmm.
Or hydrogenated fat. And we all know that this fat, this type of cholesterol, the bad cholesterol, is associated with heart disease.
Right.
With high blood pressure and even diabetes. We know that.
Mm-hmm.
And what is the number one cause of erectile dysfunction in the world? It's these diseases, diabetes, hypertension, heart disease.
That's right.
Of the decreased blood flow. And
exactly. And so, I just wanted to interject here. I get some of my new clients, and they've been, so the guy is presenting, he's saying, I've got erectile dysfunction, And have you been to a urologist? And yes. And perhaps the urologist has suggested Viagra or Cialis. But the urologist fails to mention, because I'll ask, that the man, after he takes one of these PDE5 inhibitors, the Cialis or the Viagra, or there are many others, to not eat a big meal, because then the body is involved with digesting the food.
Yes.
And rather than the blood going to the penis where it's needed for the erection. But mm-hmm. It's just amazing to me that many urologists fail to mention this. But then we have these other problems that you're talking about with the SAD, you know. So I just had to interject that because I continue to be astounded by the urologists, so many not mentioning this, you know, to eat lightly. Actually, that's actually a good suggestion for any couple that wants to have a robust sex life, is before they plan sexual activity to not have a heavy meal.
Exactly, definitely, because as you said, the blood is, instead of going to your sexual organs, mm-hmm. will be diverted towards your gut.
Right.
And, it's a sad thing, and it's a sorry state of medicine nowadays, but, you know, we've forgotten the basics of health and human body. And this is a saying which has been there for thousands of years.
Mm-hmm.
You are what you eat. And, you know, let food be thy medicine. These are, you know, Hippocrates said that. And
yes.
This is exactly true. Food can be your medicine. And food can be your downfall also.
Well, you know, I'm wondering, Dr. Shaw, if the old adage, you are what you eat, maybe we could reword it, and you are what your intestinal flora eat. Do you think you could reword it that way?
Well, that's a funny thing you said it, because, you know, there have been some studies showing that our gut bacteria, the makeup of our gut bacteria can also dictate what we eat. If we have preponderance of good bacteria, they will make us crave eating good food because they want that good food. If we have preponderance of bad bacteria, they'll make us crave bad food because they want that bad food. So this is another example how our gut bacteria can influence our overall health, our weight. And, you know, as you know, more obese you are, more overweight you are, less satisfying your sexual health and your sexual life is.
That's very true. And what do you think about, as I understand it, the apostat is the part of the brain that lets you know if you're hungry or not. And are there some obese people that have destroyed the apostat where they don't even know if they're hungry or not?
Well, there is a hormone called leptin.
Yes.
And that hormone tells our brain when to stop eating.
Ah.
So this hormone, leptin, has been found to be greatly affected and regulated by our gut bacteria.
Oh, so, please expand on that. That's fascinating.
Yeah, there have been some studies showing that there are different phyla or families of bacteria in our gut,
mm-hmm.
which can send signals to the fat cells, which primarily secrete leptin, to either increase the production of leptin or decrease the production of leptin. So when the production of leptin is decreased, the signal to the brain that when leptin goes to the brain and says, it's enough, now I should, now I feel full now, so I should stop eating.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So when that signal is blocked or the leptin levels are not enough, you
mm-hmm.
don't have that negative signal coming in, and so you keep on feeling hungry and you keep on eating. So you know, that's another way how our gut and our gut microbiome is influencing our weight, and then you know, and then also indirectly affecting our sexual health, our and our libido. And because you know, you in your practice, you know, it's probably you know, and just like my practice, most of the people who are obese, they don't really have a healthy sexual life.
No, that's exactly right. That's exactly right. Well, let's go back for a moment to SAD, the standard American diet, and how it can affect our sex life. And as I understand it, fermented foods like sauerkraut and kefir and yogurt contain active cultures of beneficial bacteria. So the first beneficial microbe in our gut, and I think that's Bifidobacterium infantitis, all this Latin, I'm probably mispronouncing it, is introduced through that first one is introduced through breast milk during the initial days of life, helping us learn to digest milk sugars. And then and I'm so glad that I breastfed both my daughter and my son, and they're very healthy as young adults. They're very healthy. But as we mature, these other species colonize in the intestines, the colon, and the vagina. So talking about diet and breast milk and having colonizing in the intestines, colons, and the vagina.
Yes.
Can you expand on that, Dr. Shaw?
Well, yeah. So as you said, you know, bifidobacteria, and there are different subphyla of bifidobacteria. Lactobacilli is one of the bacteria which is produced in the mother's milk, which helps the baby break down the lactose in mother's milk. And these two phyla are the biggest phyla of bacteria which we have in our gut. And then there are many other smaller ones. At one estimate, they think that probably around 1,000 different species of bacteria are residing in our gut and in our vagina, on our skin, probably more, and, you know, millions of genes that these bacteria have. So, yes, so the lactobacilli in the vagina, they keep the vaginal pH acidic. And when they keep the vaginal pH acidic, they don't let the bad or pathogenic bacteria grow, because acidic environment in the vagina kills those bad bacteria. So these lactobacilli are so important in preventing urinary tract infections. So if, you know, if you have a urinary tract infection, you are having burning and pain, how can you enjoy sex?
Exactly. And so many UTIs, the doctors just automatically prescribe an antibiotic, which is I'm just wondering, and I've seen it actually, where women, if they take the longer route and get wells on their own without taking an antibiotic, they won't set up this very difficult thing where they've got reoccurring yeast infections and so on.
Exactly, you know, mm-hmm. I totally agree with you, and giving the antibiotic just for minor urinary tract infection actually harms the vaginal epithelium in the long run, because when you take these antibiotics, the more delicate bacteria, like the lactobacilli, are the first one to die.
Ah, yes.
So, you know, you are removing that that natural guard that you had over there in, to protect you against those bad bacteria.
Mm-hmm.
So we guess what's going to happen. The lactobacilli is going to die off first. The bad bacteria might die, might not die. Some of them might survive.
Mm-hmm.
And then they can come back again. And this time you can have a worse infection, or you can have even chronic infections.
Go ahead.
And I say that, you know, having a good diet, nutrition, lifestyle, hygiene, use of foods which are rich in probiotics and prebiotics,
yes,
is more than enough.
Yes,
for most of these problems.
Mm-hmm. Well, I've lived a long time. I'm a senior, and I've been very fortunate, because I've had very few vaginal infections over the years, maybe one or two. But I've also not had antibiotics. So I'm using myself as an example. I think I have good sexual health because I have not had antibiotics.
No, you're exactly right. And you
yes.
should give your example you know, to your clients, your patients,
mm-hmm.
And you know, I have patients who have chronic urinary tract infections.
Yes,
and they come and see me just because they are sick and tired of these infections. Because the doctors just say you just have to be on this antibiotic for life.
Well, and that's so ridiculous.
It's ridiculous.
And then they don't want to have intercourse because it's, well, they shouldn't actually, because they can give, if it's a yeast infection, they can give it to their partner back,
mm-hmm.
and it's painful, and it and so that's going to interfere with the libido, right?
Exactly. Plus, also, you know, when you kill the good bacteria,
mm-hmm.
also the lubrication of your vaginal epithelium is affected.
Mm-hmm.
Your vaginal epithelium gets dry. That leads to painful intercourse.
Yes.
And, you know, it's, as I said, there are certain infections which need to be treated by antibiotics, but they are far and few.
Mm-hmm.
The vast majority of the women who have these symptoms of burning or increased urgency, or a little bit of discharge, can take care of these symptoms without taking antibiotics and actually preventing them from having long, you know, chronic other problems happening in future.
Yeah, don't you think that antibiotics in general are just overprescribed?
Well, that's I don't know. I think me, you, and like-minded people we are trying our best to tell it to the masses, to the people. Please, for God's sake, if you have a sniffle or runny nose or a mild headache, you know, and you go to your doctor and he or she wants to prescribe an antibiotic, please just remember that 95% of these problems, these infections, are not bacterial. They will get better on their own.
And so by taking what did you say? Repeat that, because that's something I think a lot of people don't know. And you're a medical doctor, so 95%. Say it again, please, Dr. Shaw.
95% of the upper respiratory tract infections, which is the most common reason for being prescribed antibiotic worldwide, especially in the United States, are viral and or allergic.
And allergic.
We don't need antibiotics for these infections. Let me tell you one thing. My daughter is 10 years old. She has never had a single dose of antibiotic in her life, not even a single dose of antibiotic. And she is perfectly healthy. No problem. Mm-hmm. My son, after, you know, I learned about, you know, all these things that I know today, he hasn't had any antibiotic for the last, he's 13 now, so I would say at least 7-8 years he hasn't had any antibiotics.
That's helped his health.
Yeah,
his overall health
immensely.
Yeah.
And one thing I also want to say before, you know, I forget. When you talk about food, we have to remember that many of the food that we eat, especially if it's meat, it contains hormones. If it's not organic and not, in case of poultry, if it's not, you know, like free range, in case
that's
of
right.
Beef and pork, if it's not grass-fed, these most majority of the meat being consumed in the United States is full of hormones and antibiotics. Guess what's going to happen when this meat goes inside your body? That delicate balance of hormones that your body is trying its best to maintain,
yes,
that balance is gone.
Wow. So you ingest, if a person is eating too much red meat, especially beef that's not been grass-fed, then the delicate balance is disturbed inside your body.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. What other foods are, I guess, any, as I understand it, even corn that's GMO, that's been, that they spray it with antibacterial, or what is it? Anyway,
herbicides,
yes, and that can also impact your gut.
It not only impacts our gut, it impacts our cellular structure. Can you imagine that even the structure of our cell is affected by these chemicals? So, you know, so we ingest something containing these chemicals. And we eat that thing. It goes inside our gut. Now, 70 to 75%, or some people even say 80% of our immune system is in and around our gut. And there's a reason behind it. Because most of the toxins and bad stuff that we are exposed to comes through our mouth.
So 80%, I just want to repeat this because I think it's very important for our listeners to really understand this. 80% of our immune system is impacted by our gut because,
it's actually around our gut, immediately surrounding our gut.
All right. So by and around our gut.
Yes.
All right.
So we eat something which has these chemicals.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the biggest example is Roundup. And so we eat it, and we chew it, it's digested, and broken down into small molecules. When these molecules cross the one-cell-thick intestinal lining, our intestine is only one cell thick, the lining of our intestine, and it goes and presents itself to our immune cells, the cells which have to decide whether this thing is good or bad, whether I should produce antibodies to destroy this thing or to leave this thing to go inside into our cells. So that immune system, when it encounters these chemicals mixed with our food, it gets confused because it doesn't understand or recognizes these altered molecules, even though these molecules are, say, molecules of apple, you know, but those apple molecules have been altered by these chemicals. So when it becomes confused, it starts producing antibodies. And a point comes when it just gets overwhelmed, and guess what it leads to? Autoimmune diseases.
Oh, my goodness, yes. Wow. The gut health is so, so important. I can't tell you, Dr. Shaw, how glad I am that we've been having this discussion. In the more than six years now, slightly more, that I've been doing this program, I've never had a discussion like we're having about gut health and its impact on our sexuality and on our general health. And I think it's so important. And I do thank you. We still have a few minutes, but I just wanted to get this in now that this is so, so, so important. And when I write this show up, I'm going to tell our listeners that they can learn more about your integrative health mandala. And the website is mimqc.com.
Yes.
Yes, and so I'll put that in the write-up. But, you know, we're talking about gut flora and hormones and metabolism, and I was reading that beneficial flora metabolize and recycle hormones, including estrogen and thyroid hormones and phytoestrogens from food sources, which can help offset symptoms of menopause, PMS, and perimenopause.
Mm-hmm.
And so I want to just bring back this discussion to female sexuality because all of these things can help maintain a proper hormonal balance and may even protect bone and breast health as well. Do you think that's true?
101% true.
Oh, yes. Okay.
You know, there is no doubt in my mind that these, if we really, really focus on our lifestyle and environment, and when I say this, the first main thing is diet and nutrition.
Mm-hmm.
we can prevent most of the modern health problems.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we talk about what's number one cause, heart disease, hypertension, stroke, diabetes, autoimmune diseases, mm-hmm. even, you know, diseases like fibromyalgia. And then mm-hmm. we talk about, you know, female, the most common endocrine problem in the world, polycystic ovarian syndrome, endometriosis. All of these are related to poor lifestyle choices. They are the basis for most of these problems is inflammation.
That's right. Inflammation.
Yeah, inflammation starts when you make poor lifestyle choices, especially diet and nutrition. And that leads to damage to your gut. Damaged gut leads to imbalance to inflammation. And that inflammation leads to almost every health problem you can think of. And I believe with my patients, when I see patients with polycystic ovarian syndrome or endometriosis, which, you, as you know, are younger women,
yes,
and they do have problems with their sexual health and libido and infertility, my first step is let's first focus on fixing your gut.
Mm-hmm. And that's your first line of intervention, isn't it? You have a new patient, and they come to you, and I know that at your Mandala Integrative Medicine, so they have a consultation with Dr. Shaw, and you evaluate gut health, hormones, thyroid, adrenals, anxiety, depression, allergies, and more, and then you do more testing follow-up. And the patient gets nutritional counseling, and also you've got a health coach, and then follow up with you. It's very thorough. I like it so much.
Yeah, because, you know, health is not just a 5-minute visit with your physician and taking 5 different pills. Health is a balance between your mind, body, and spirit.
And I think I'm going to hear the music soon. That means this show is over. But I think that's a great way to close this. Health is a balance of mind, body, and spirit. Thus the name of your integrative medicine, Mandala.
Yes.
And you are from Pakistan originally, right?
Yes, I am.
Okay, that's the music. You know, I want to have you back on this program. You're so informative. Thank you, Dr. Shaw.
Anytime. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Take care. Bye-bye. Se ti perderai nel labirinto di un amaro autore.